Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, November 13, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. reiterates the protection of civilians while backing Israel's right to defend itself.
We believe in the importance of the laws of war, which means taking every possible measure to protect civilians. At the same time, we will continue to stand behind the proposition that Israel has the right to defend itself against terrorist attacks.
A pro-business summit will introduce on Tuesday a private sector bill of rights to attract investors in Africa. The son of a Ghanaian and Liberian immigrant is elected the first black congressman from the state of Rhode Island. Liberia's Electoral Commission says all is set for Tuesday's presidential runoff.
Everyone is ready, and we're just waiting for the hour to begin the voting process for the presidential runoff.
And an East African Community Agricultural Group calls for harmonized laws on regional seas. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. As he stressed that his country will continue its military operation in Gaza until it defeats Hamas, Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed speculation on Sunday on a possible deal to free more than 200 hostages kidnapped by the militant group on October 7. VOA's Veronica Baldera Iglesias has the details.
A day after dozens of Arab leaders held an emergency meeting in Saudi Arabia and strongly condemned the Israeli military offensive in Gaza, White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan appeared on ABC, underlining the United States' position on Tel Aviv's war against Hamas.
We believe in the importance of the laws of war, which means taking every possible measure to protect civilians. At the same time, we will continue to stand behind the proposition that Israel has the right to defend itself against terrorist attacks.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who was interviewed Sunday on CNN, was asked to comment on U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's recent remarks that too many Palestinians have been killed in Gaza.
I think any civilian loss is a tragedy, and the blame should be placed squarely on Hamas because it prevents them from leaving the war zone, sometimes at gunpoint. It fired on the safe zone and the safe corridor that we enacted.
Separately, Netanyahu addressed the speculation about a possible deal for the release of the hostages kidnapped by Hamas on October 7. His remarks aired on NBC's Meet the Press program.
Extraordinary work that the IDF is doing, putting pressure on the Hamas leadership. That's the one thing that might create a deal. And if a deal is available, well, we'll talk about it when it's there. We'll announce it if it's achieved.
The prime minister added that when the war is over, the overall military responsibility of Gaza will remain in the hands of Israel, but that it's too early to determine who will govern it.
As far as the civilian management of Gaza, we need to see the following two things. Gaza has to be demilitarized and Gaza has to be de-radicalized. Mm-hmm. And I think so far we haven't seen any Palestinian force, including the Palestinian Authority, that is able to do it.
Meanwhile, on the ground, Palestinian civilians continued fleeing northern Gaza as several United Nations agencies called for an immediate halt on attacks against hospitals. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Liberians vote tomorrow, Tuesday, in a runoff election between President George Weah of the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, and former Vice President Joseph Boakai of the main opposition Unity Party. In the October 10 first-round vote, Weah narrowly beat Boakai 43.83% to 43.44%. There were a few problems associated with the first round of the polls, including 114,000 invalid votes nationwide. National Elections Commission NEC Chair David Etta Brown Lansana tells me that everything is in place for Tuesday's runoff.
The commission is very well prepared for the 14th November presidential runoff. I say this to say that we have all the money that we requested that was budgeted for the process. You know that our entire budget was 53 million. So we have received all of that money. We also say we are ready because Our ballots arrived in the country last week, and they were deployed to the field. We are in the process of deploying staff to the various polling stations, and we've conducted civic and voter education, as well as we have trained our staff in the field to conduct these elections. That is the temporary staff. So everyone is ready, and we're just waiting for the hour to begin the voting process for the presidential runoff.
Madam Chair, there were some issues about ballot security in the first round. So what measures do you have in place to guard against this?
We continue to work with the Liberia National Police, that is head of the joint security, usually escort our materials, and then they are deployed on Elections Day. We recognize, that is both institutions recognize, that we have some challenges with respect to deployment of security personnel at all of the 2080 polling precincts. So we understand that there have been measures put in place to ensure deployment to these areas, especially those areas where we were, that is the security were not really stationary and visible enough to counter any problem on the field.
Talking about ballots, there was a huge number of invalid ballots in the first round. What do you think accounted for this, and how do you hope to minimize that in this runoff?
We announced during our preliminary process of the 10th October elections that we encountered some 114,000+ invalid votes. And we anticipate that with the increase in civic and voter education, where we also deployed some of our permanent staff to the field to show people how to mark the ballots, we anticipate that the invalid votes would be lowered for the runoff. We also noticed by way of some of the discussions around town that during the 10th October polls, because there were many ballots, and large numbers of candidates, especially for the presidential ballot, which was some 20 candidates. Some of the voters just got weary and, you know, didn't really know what to do. So now that we have just two candidates on, you know, the ballot, perhaps maybe this could be an indicator that some of the invalid votes would probably not occur during this time.
So before I let you go, Madam Chair, there were some disputes arising from the first round. I am talking specifically about the complaint filed by the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mr. Bofall Chambers, concerning his defeat or supposedly defeat and allegations that he was inciting violence in his district. Have you been able to resolve these disputes, and how much do they impact the runoff?
What I would say to you is that our hearing office, the records in there have shown that about some 50, that is 50 complaints were recorded from the 10th October poll. As at now, more than 20 of these cases have been closed, either by dismissal, withdrawal, resolution, or abandonment by complainants. But currently we have senatorial and representative electoral cases ongoing. So I will not speak specifically to the case that you have cited, but to say that we are hearing them, and that, you know, those rulings based on evidences and what have you will come about either from the hearing office or when they are appealed to the Board of Commissioners or when, in fact, they are appealed to the Supreme Court of Liberia. So we're doing our best to get rid of these cases, to hear them, but I will not be specific as to which case you are alluding to.
Madam Chair, thank you so much. A pleasure always to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, James, and have a good day.
Devierta Brown-Lansana is the chair of the National Elections Commission of Liberia. She was speaking with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. The people of the 1st Congressional District in the northeastern U.S. state of Rhode Island last Tuesday elected its first black congressman. He is Gabe Amo, the son of Ghanaian and Liberian immigrants. Congressman-elect Amo also once worked in the White House under former President Barack Obama and then Vice President Joe Biden. He tells me that he looks forward to representing the people of the district and the state of Rhode Island.
My reaction is that of excitement and a sense of gratitude for the support of people throughout the 1st Congressional District in Rhode Island. Excited to get to work, but a profound sense of the gravity of taking on such a role, given all that's happening in our country, in this world.
Congressman, I understand you have an immigrant background. Tell us a little bit more about your background.
Yes, I'm the son of two West African immigrants. My dad was born in Ghana. I came to the United States in 1979, and my mother is from Liberia, was born in Liberia, and came here in the early 80s.
I also understand, Congressman-elect, that you will be the first Black congressman from the state of Rhode Island. If I'm not mistaken, also, you also have worked in former President Barack Obama and current President Joe Biden's administrations. What does this mean about the promise of America? But if you don't mind, also, can you tell me a little bit about your own state of Rhode Island?
Yes, I had an opportunity to work for both President Biden and President Obama. When I worked for President Biden, I was the special assistant to the president and deputy director of the White House Office of Intergovernmental Affairs, where I served as a liaison to state and local leaders around the country, specifically working with mayors across the country when, you know, bad things happen, like mass shootings or extreme weather, snowstorms, hurricane, et cetera, and also to help galvanize support for and implement the historic legislation passed during his time as president, the American Rescue Plan, the Inflation Reduction Act, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, and so many others. In Rhode Island, to answer that part of your question, you know, it is a oddly, you know, misconceived as a place that is not diverse. It is, actually has, you know, people from so many West African countries, Sierra Leone, Ghana, Liberia, Nigeria, but also has the sort of the traditional waves of Western European migration from Italy and Ireland and France, and also pockets of other important communities like the Armenian community, our Latino population from the Dominican Republic and Colombia, Jamaican population, a Haitian population. So we are a big mix of what there is in the country, especially here in the district. And I look forward to representing everybody when I get sworn in tomorrow night.
Congressman-elect Gabe Amol, thank you so much again, and congratulations again.
Well, thank you so much, and I look forward to doing the work on behalf of people around the state of Rhode Island and in the 1st District.
That's Congressman-elect Gabe Amol of the 1st Congressional District of the state of Rhode Island. He was speaking with us from the city of Providence. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Monday, November 13. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The annual Intra-African Trade Fair continues today in Cairo, Egypt. It presents a platform for stakeholders involved in African trade to meet and explore business opportunities and advance trade and investment on the continent. Tomorrow, Tuesday, the African Continental Free Trade Area and the Africa Private Sector Summit will present the Private Sector Bill of Rights to create an enabling business environment in Africa. J. Wendell Ade is the outgoing chair of the meeting. He tells me that the Bill of Rights includes the right to peace, security and stability, and effective legal systems that protect the sanctity of business contracts.
The significance of this is trade integration, trade facilitation among the African countries, and more importantly, made in Africa. That's what it's all about. It is a passage towards improving local production across the continent so that the continent will be able to feed itself, produce consumer goods and other things for the continent. But most importantly, it is about transforming the natural resources of the continent for continental consumption and export. If Africa is talking about addressing the migration problem. What we are missing here is that the greener pasture is right in Africa. So it is important for us to focus on transforming the natural resources to create this greener pasture on the continent.
I read some statistics that Africa has about 2% of world trade. And I'm wondering, how is that possible when the continent has plenty of natural resources?
Well, we have the natural resources, but unfortunately, we are exporting the natural resources. We are not providing the daily condition associated with these natural resources. So the focus of the AFTA is now geared towards changing that pattern so that there will be trade integration across the continent that will look more at transforming these natural resources for the continent going forward.
I understand you will be presenting the Bill of Rights Tuesday in Cairo. What is the significance of this Bill of Rights and what are some of the key provisions?
The significance to it is that over the years, since the founding of the OAU, Non-African Union, they came up with a series of important protocols that include, for example, peace and security, a free movement of people, common passport, common currency. Those are key elements to facilitate trade integration across the continent. Unfortunately, we have not been able to implement most of the protocols signed by the African heads of states. So what we say to the private sector is that look at the protocols and EU Agenda 2063 as gifts from our leaders to the people of Africa in terms of the benefits to be derived from both projects. The significance here is that if you implement the protocols to the letter, what you'll be doing is creating a predictable, conducive investment climate across the continent. What is it that business people look for? They want peace and security. They want convertible currency. They want rule of law. So in essence is that if you have these things, then obviously you have a level of employment. You would mitigate this whole issue of people risking to find greener pasture across the ocean and so forth.
Are you hopeful that these provisions in this Bill of Rights can be obtained throughout Africa? Because if you look around, it seems that each government in Africa is doing its own thing.
Well, to start off with, most of what we have, or basically what we have identified as rights, are already in the protocols. We're simply now trying to get the business community to claim these as rights and to convince the respective countries to implement the protocols.
Yewunde Ade is the outgoing chair of the Africa Private Sector Summit. He was speaking with us from Cairo, Egypt. The East African Community Consortium says that failure to implement a regional law regulating seed production and preservation is hampering farmers in the region. Moses Javier Rimana has the story.
Last Saturday, regional agriculture organizations called for a harmonized seed law to boost the agriculture production that has largely been affected by climate change. The East African Legislative Assembly in 2018 passed a bill to harmonize seed laws in member states, which up till now has not been implemented. Chris Okafor is the managing director of the African Agricultural Leadership Institute.
The farmers, they are using inefficient technologies to produce food. So we are looking into how can we modernize the way farmers are producing food. There are modern machines, mechanization techniques they can use. And this is what will attract youth to go into agriculture.
In Eastern and Central Africa, the seed industry faces different laws, standards and regulations, which are said to be costly to meet. Still, many African countries prefer local seeds rather than imported ones. The ES research indicates that 90% of farmers in Africa rely on seeds from an informal farmer-managed seed system. Abbas Mutumba, a farmer from Uganda, said that he is worried about the sustainability of the imported seeds.
When you plant these seeds and when you plant some of their seeds, they actually have big yields, but they cannot regerminate for another season or for follow-up seasons like we used to keep our own seed. So our own food security now will be taken in those multinationals' hands.
Fred Maina is the assistant director of the Kenya Agriculture and Livestock Research Organization. She says that a lot still needs to be done to regulate agricultural seeds.
If the country systems are not yet working, then it means even getting the regional law becomes a challenge. We don't have to all be equal, but I think with the huge differences in the different country laws, that makes it difficult.
The regional bill that was adopted in 2018 by the East African Legislative Assembly seeks to promote production and trade certified seeds within the community and with other trading partners. In East Africa, agriculture employs over 80% of the population, while more than 70% of the industries are agro-based and depend on agriculture as the main source of raw materials. Farmers like Abbas Mutumba are pessimistic about the sustainability of seed production in the long run, but harmonized seed regulations in the region could boost production and help farmers maintain access to quality crops. For VOA Africa, I'm Moses Havyarimana.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport in Pretoria, South Africa, where South African side Mamelodi Sundowns were crowned the first ever Africa Football League champions after a 2-0 second leg victory over Wydad Casablanca sealed a 3-2 aggregate triumph. Sundowns went into the home leg trailing 2-1, but turned the tie around thanks to goals from Peter Shilule and Aubrey Modiba at the Rancros Loftus-Versfeld Stadium in Pretoria. Coach Rulani Mukwena masterminded a tactical plan that overcame Wydad's early pressure before ruthlessly capitalizing on errors.
Congratulations to this amazing group of players. I'm just very lucky to be their coach. And congratulations to Mamelodi Sundowns. Congratulations. It's for the fans. It's for the Yellow Nation. It's for this magnificent group of players. God is good and God loves us all.
The triumph caps a historic continental triumph for Sundowns, who have now become the first champions of the new African Football League since lifting the CAF Super Cup 6 years ago. Staying with football news, Liverpool talisman Mohamed Salah received high praise from his manager Jurgen Klopp and the opposing side Brentford manager Thomas Frank after reaching yet another milestone in Sunday's 3-0 victory over Brentford in the English Premier League. The win for Liverpool propelled them into the second spot in the league. The 31-year-old Egyptian scored in each half to reach 200 goals in English soccer, 198 for Liverpool and 2 for Chelsea. He also became the first player ever to score in each of Liverpool's first 6 home games of the season. Klopp described Salah's performance as exceptional.
Just an exceptional player. He played a super game today. And we all know how difficult it is against these tall center, back center, halves, whatever, two players around him, all these kind of things, how often he kept the ball for us and he could play from there. That was super important. And scoring 2 goals, yeah.
Brentford manager Thomas Frank spoke superbly, especially on Mo Salah's greatness.
I think potentially the best player in the Premier League, but potentially. In terms of goals and assists, what a level. Must be one of the best offensive players in the world, like not top 10, yeah, top 3. I can't, you know, and I need to think, I'm sitting here on the spot. But also what he's done. So when you have a player of that quality, you just know there is a problem.
Away from football news now, Kenyan driver Karen Patel and co-driver Tosif Han claimed their first ever FIA African Rally Championship titles with a scintillating podium finish in Iringa, Tanzania. The win sees the 2022 Kenyan National Rally Champion and reigning Kenyan Motorsport Athlete of the Year win his maiden continental title. In cricket news, South Africa Proteas captain Themba Bavuma faces a race against time to be fit for the Cricket World Cup semi-final match against Australia on Thursday. The 33-year-old sustained a right hamstring strain during Friday's Cricket World Cup match against Afghanistan in Ahmedabad. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, November 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.